This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss a Mother Jones investigation called The Future of the Border is Even More Dystopian Than You Thought. Automated surveillance and AI are here to stay whether Trump builds his wall or not. Today's guest, Lauren Markham, reports that Donald Trump's bombastic rhetoric has always focused on mass deportations and has cherished border wall. But all along, his administration was building a surveillance apparatus that the Biden White House has since expanded. And that could be the single most powerful tool in his hands of a second Trump administration to carry out extrajudicial exclusion at the U.S. border, one that could be used against its citizens, too. Lauren Markham is a journalist whose work focuses on youth, migration, the environment, and her home state of California. Lauren is the author of the book, A Map of Future Ruins, on Borders and Belonging, which The New Yorker listed as one of the best books they've read this year so far. The book looks at immigration through a fire at a refugee camp in Greece, the myths we create around immigration, and Lauren's family's story of coming to the United States. Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much. It's a real honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. Anti-immigration rhetoric is still the focus of Trump and the GOP in this election. People who are fleeing violence and poverty to come here are depicted as rapists and terrorists, and they're responsible for every social ill and economic ill in this country. The Trump-Vance ticket promises to deport millions of people. Lauren, what do you think about the public discourse and the media coverage of immigration and all of these issues in this country?
It's a great question and a big one. As you say, immigration has become both like a political football, and the profile of the immigrant has sort of mutated into this portrait of like a marauding invader at our gates. And that's very intentional, right? This is a manipulation of the public imaginary, and one that's incredibly powerful. I think that part of the problem with this rhetoric, and this is something that the right wing is very skilled at, they're very good at moving the needle. They're very good at using their bombast such that the left, or even this, the centrist left, has to kind of move to where they are. So move to the presumption of immigration as a problem. Move to the presumption of the immigrant as this marauding invader, and move to the presumption of borders and this defended border even needing to exist in the first place. And so I'm deeply troubled by the rhetoric, and deeply troubled by, frankly, the presumption of a lot of the coverage of immigration that sort of takes a lot of the right-wing rhetoric, even while trying to sort of break it down or undermine it. It sort of takes some of it as face value and for granted in a way that's kind of moving all of the rhetoric to the right.
Well, we heard that in one of the questions last night during the CNN interview, and I'll play a clip in a minute. But Dana Bash asked Kamala Harris, do you want to demilitarize the border, with no context to talk about, well, let's talk about what has changed at the border. I mean, what you write about, Lauren, about automated surveillance and AI are here to stay whether Trump builds his wall or not. Can you talk about the importance of bringing context about how the militarization of the border has changed so much over the years?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the militarization of the border is a long kind of a long continuum, and the more recent technological advances are only part of that militarization continuum, right? The militarization of the border starts with, you know, effectively deploying all of these troops to kind of be there all the time guarding, and that's the Border Patrol, and of course over the past few years, our country has done, starting under the Trump administration, but frankly building off of many administrations before that, including the Obama administration, their sort of focus on tightening the border. Our country has built more and more automated surveillance towers. So while Trump is using this, Trump and many other politicians are using this idea, the wall is a symbol, right? But we all know, and I think the Trump administration included, that like walls don't work, right? They're effective merely as symbols. People go over walls, under walls, through walls, all over the and walls all over the world. And this is true all throughout time, right? Like people breached Hadrian's Wall and breached the Great Wall of China. But the wall is a powerful symbol. Meanwhile, as everyone sort of focused on that, and this is again what I mean, sort of like Trump says something and everyone kind of goes racing to that the bombast of whatever was said. His administration, and then this has continued under the Biden administration, have erected these automated surveillance towers that almost make the physical wall irrelevant in the sense that they are collecting tons and tons of data. And, you know, each surveillance tower can see miles into the distance and 360 degree views. And they're collecting that data and analyzing that data remotely. So they've effectively created this, you know, this, the secondary and a much more hidden and frankly, much more sinister border wall, that is, you know, doing this pernicious work of border security and border militarization. One thing I just want to say is that, you know, this reporting sort of took place in El Paso during the Border Security Expo, which is this large, the reporting from Mother Jones, which is this large security expo where all of these people come to sort of sell their guns and their automated fencing and their surveillance towers and their technology that detects heartbeats in the undercarriage of a car. And throughout this, the officials talked again and again and again about something called the adversary. They said, well, you know, our adversary is well equipped. Well, we need these tools to, you know, to fight our adversary. If we don't do this, how will our adversary, you know, how will we fight our adversary? And what's really, really interesting is that is military speak, right? That is military speak. This idea that there is an adversary that we have to fight. And no one ever drilled down on who specifically is the adversary. And the fact of the matter is, yes, it can be a terrorist. Yes, it's drugs. Yes, it's contraband. Sure. But the main adversary that our border is fighting, and this is where Trump is just sort of speaking the truth, is people, is individual people, generally poor people or people fleeing war-torn places trying to come into our country.
And reading your piece about this Border Security Expo, a massive conference that drew 1,700 attendees in 2023, there's so much money involved in this.
Yes.
There's got to be people to grab and people to fear. Therefore, we need these crazy sounding technologies. I just want to read from your piece. Inside the exhibition hall, a large fluorescent lit chamber resembling the belly of a colossal blimp, visitors were met by a Verizon-built robot dog performing an uncanny march, forward like an old-timey soldier, side to side like a jittery crab. Automated ground surveillance vehicles, as the dogs are known, can lend a, quote, helping hand with new technology that can assist with enhancing the capabilities of customs and border protection personnel while simultaneously increasing their safety downrange. These dogs are ready to be outfitted with cameras, sensors, and radio. Other exhibitors featured No BS canine food to help optimize real-life working dogs, virtual reality training systems that sharpen law enforcement shooting skills, heavy-duty cargo e-bikes, mobile fences and guns, of course, sensors, like you said, this is so surreal. It's like a movie. Sensors that can detect a human heartbeat hidden in a vehicle. There's so much money involved in this industry.
So much money. And, you know, the corollary with defense contractors isn't, it's not just a corollary. I mean, these are some of the exact same companies that sell to the Department of Defense, right? So a lot of the folks at the Electronic Frontier Foundation who've done a ton of research and have done, I mentioned them in the piece, they've mapped the surveillance along the border, which no one else had done. They've sort of counted and mapped and verified where these surveillance towers are. And by the way, they're often like in the middle of communities or right next to a children's playground or on a, you know, a highway that all of us might drive on. They sort of discuss this as, you know, a lot of this technology is first tested in war zones, right? And then it is tested at the US border. And then some of this technology becomes a part of sort of mainstream all of our everyday lives, even if we're citizens of the US. So like a great example is sort of the retina scan technology or fingerprint technology. Now, if you come into the, you know, if you're coming in through customs, having been out of the country, that technology often starts in a war zone, then ends up at the border, and then ends up being technology that all of us tangle with.
Do you have any idea how big this industry is and how much money we're talking about here?
It's really interesting that it's incredibly, I mean, billions of dollars, but it's really difficult to follow the money exactly, partially because there's so many different contracts to so many different companies, to so many different things. And part of that is there's like some degree of this, that's sort of the sinister nature of hiding this, but a lot of it is just, you know, I've worked for a large urban school district. I worked for a large urban school district for a long time. Like, it's just also one of the natures of bureaucracy that the way things get billed in public budgets, it's just difficult to kind of parse and aggregate. And this, you know, this budget line will fund this and we'll buy this. And it's just hard to track. But it's a lot.
Today, we're speaking with Lauren Markham, a journalist who wrote a Mother Jones investigation called "The Future of the Border is Even More Dystopian Than You Thought. Automated surveillance and AI are here to stay, whether Trump builds his wall or not." Lauren, can you tell us how this all unfolded? So you write that the Trump administration was building this massive surveillance apparatus when he was talking about building the wall, mass deportations. And then you report that the Biden White House has expanded this. How did this all happen?
Yeah, I mean, once again, this is part of the continuum in general of trying to fortify our border, kind of essentially, as we've seen, by whatever means necessary. And you have these tech companies, Silicon Valley tech companies, you know, Peter Thiel has one of the biggest surveillance companies, another one, Anduril Industries, and then another one comes out of Israel. And they've tested a lot of their surveillance in Gaza and in other parts of Palestine. And these tech companies come to the U.S. government and say, hey, look, you know, they pitch it to them. Buy this from us. You don't need to put men and women in green, which is what they call the border patrol, on the border. You can have them, we can train them to man surveillance towers so that they're not at risk. They're not out in the middle of the desert. They can just, you know, get this constant feed of data. And in fact, they can also purchase AI tools to help them analyze the data so that you don't necessarily need someone kind of constantly looking at, you know, the detective movies always have, you know, the minute the police officer turns to get his coffee, like that's when the person goes on the surveillance screen, right? So this is just these companies, in part through the Border Security Expo, pitch their wares to the U.S. government, and the U.S. government says, yeah, great idea. Let's do it. Who makes
these decisions ultimately?
It really is the border patrol themselves, but the Department of Homeland, you know, with various people within the Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Homeland Security has recently opened an AI office, and they have like a czar of AI kind of overseeing what they say is responsible use. This is under the Biden administration, responsible use of AI and surveillance tools. But of course, as we all know within the public discourse around AI, that even if we're focusing, there's so many unknowns about AI and the downstream impacts and kind of what it becomes on its own, that even an attempt at responsible use doesn't necessarily have any guarantees. And there's no guarantee that that position would even still exist under the Trump administration.
How are they using AI?
So they're using AI often to analyze the data itself. And this is a relative, so they're using surveillance towers to gather the data, and then the AI is analyzing the data or kind of alerting once the surveillance tapes are coming in, like, okay, here is something suspicious that you have to go look at.
According to The Intercept, Homeland Security's 2025 fiscal year budget request includes almost $26 billion to, quote, secure the border, mostly through more government agents and more capable technology. Hidden in the fine print is the $6 billion tower surveillance program, one that's been in the works and growing since 2005, 4 years. Why aren't these programs and the amount of money being spent on all of this getting more attention, given that Trump and the Republican Party have I mean, they've done a great job of making the border almost the number one issue in this campaign.
Well, it's really interesting because being surveilled and kind of this idea of constant surveillance is like a boogeyman fear of the far right, right? This idea that the government's watching you, that get the government out of my house, get the and of course, like the far left and the left wing has this as well. But this kind of the boogeyman fear of surveillance is really real. So to talk about this surveillance is to in a more public way, is to kind of cop to the fact that these surveillance networks and these surveillance tools are in, like in certain cases, like communities, like they can see into your living room. You know, some of these surveillance towers are in border communities where they can see into people's homes or into schools. And so it's more risky to talk about this. But also, I just think that there is something, like I said earlier, about talking about the wall itself and talking about the valor of these people risking their lives at the border, these Border Patrol agents. There is something more alluring and that kind of works in the popular imaginary of like the wild, wild west. There are these people defending our borders and the kind of, you know, this ideology. And these are my, I'm speaking in the ideological terms, not in my own parlance, but the idea of these marauding invaders, these savages at our gates, and we have these men to defend them, and we have this wall. The symbolism of the wall is incredibly potent.
What about media coverage? Is this aspect getting much attention?
I mean, it's getting more attention over the years. I will say, and maybe this is just me, but you know, I write a lot about people. It is a challenge to write about technology in a way that is kind of calls attention and brings this stuff to life. And so I do think it's getting media attention, but you know, what gets media attention, what we've seen over the years is what gets media attention is when the Trump administration is putting kids in cages or separating children from their families or, you know, doing this mass roundup deportation or arrest campaign. So I do think it's getting attention. I don't think it's getting enough attention. I mean, I think part of it is it's more difficult for us to graft to the sinister nature of newer technology than it is to like horrible things happening to individuals. And the impact of this surveillance is remarkable and incredibly vast and wide, but it's harder to kind of make the direct link to an individual person having experienced a harm or hardship as a result.
So we have about 5 minutes left. What could possibly happen if Trump wins again? How is he going to use these technologies domestically?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know without a crystal ball, but certainly expanding these technologies is an almost definite. I would say that would be true, frankly, under the Harris administration as well. This stuff is billed as a cheaper and less dangerous way to be surveilling the border. One thing briefly I do want to point out is that in some of the places where the highest number of deaths have occurred since these towers have been erected are also the places where there are the most towers. So, you know, the Border Patrol likes to bill themselves as a humanitarian agency doing humanitarian work. But if the surveillance, you know, they're clearly ignoring the data that people are imperiled in the desert. So very likely these will be expanded. One thing that the folks talked a lot about at the Border Security Expo is the folks from working within Department of Homeland Security is this externalization of the border. So we're not only surveilling, you know, between U.S. and Mexico, but we're also surveilling deeper into Mexico and in borders far afield. And we're doing surveillance and data sharing with other governments, you know, in at the border of Turkey and Syria, for instance, in parts of Afghanistan, surveilling and or doing surveillance data sharing so that as, and I quote this in the piece, so that as the Border Patrol agent said, you know, we know who's showing up, who they are, where they've been before they even get to our border. We know who they are. And that is incredibly, incredibly sweeping, far reaching, and to my eye, terrifying use and abuse of this technology and of power.
In our remaining minutes, did you watch the CNN interview last night, Lauren?
I didn't. And I'm going to blame my 2-year-old for that. But
okay. Well, no, you really, I should say you didn't miss much because we didn't really learn that much about new policies. But Kamala Harris reiterated her promise to sign the border bill. And a number of immigration activists say this is a very conservative border bill. So in our remaining 2 minutes, What strikes you about that bill, and what do you think will change, if anything, if Kamala Harris wins in November?
You know, it's really hard to know. I find something, and I'm sorry if this is like a disappointing answer, but I find there to be something, you know, in this stage of the campaign for a Democrat, it's really hard to know how much they're sort of pandering to the center for votes and how far like progressive they will actually go.
This is such a good point.
I'm
thinking that this entire campaign, given Trump, the power that he has to change the conversation, and then given how the media operate today, it's
a great point. Well, thank you. And I'm glad you agree. But I think that that's what's difficult. It's like, and how much is Trump sort of successful? Like, how much are we having to step to, you know, kind of stoop to Trump's conversation about the, and not just Trump, right? It's many, many people on the right and in the center of this ideology of marauding invaders at our border. And how much is that just part of the vote conversation? So it is hard to know. However, I certainly know that we want Kamala to win, those of us who believe in human rights and border justice, and the sort of project will be holding her feet to the fire. I do think that it is not a particularly progressive bill, and yet the fact is we need legislation about our immigration system. Its brokenness and its dysfunction actually serves the kind of human rights abusers, right? The chaos is, it's disorder as a political instrument. And so I think I don't want to say any law, I do think that legislation is important, even if it's sort of one step and not a progressive enough step in moving the needle in the direction of trying to actually make meaningful, comprehensive immigration reform.
And while this is all happening, The Guardian reported 4 days ago a piece about abuse of migrants is rampant at a Louisiana ICE center. People are in limbo, people are dealing with abuse, and we're waiting for changes.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, one of the most pernicious things that we do in this country, it's, you know, we talk about the border as if it's something, you know, the border is bleeds very far in to the interior and into everyday lives. And we have the highest number of immigrants detained in any country. And we are one of the only countries in the world that use this punitive default kind of prison-like detention system that was invented. The U.S. invented immigration detention during Ellis Island, where my ancestors were housed. So that is a massive issue that needs to be dealt with, is not locking up tens of thousands of immigrants at any one given time. 70% of the people who are locked up are in a private detention facility where people are profiting from these policies and from this disorder.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for your reporting. Lauren Markham is a journalist. Find her Mother Jones piece on our website. And we'd love to have you on to talk about your book, A Map of Future Ruins. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Thank you.